This is Dyslexic Design Thinking. For the past 25 years, Gil Gershoni has been the head of his own branding agency, Gershoni Creative. And one of the things he's most passionate about rebranding is his dyslexia. In this series, Gil sits down with members of the dyslexic community for eye-opening conversations about the intersection of dyslexia and creativity. Today, Gil talks to Stu Shader, an enterprise computing expert with dyslexia who is helping organizations understand the power of neurodiversity in the workplace. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Dyslexic Design Thinking, a series in which we explore the way dyslexia influences the way we think and create. I'm your host, Gil Gershoni, founder and creative director of Gershoni Creative. On today's episode, our guest is Stu Shader, alliances and business development manager at F5, and also a dyslexic. Welcome, Stu.
Good to see you, Gil. Always good to see you. Thank you.
I would love for you to tell a listener a little bit about your background. You got such a diverse background, so they get to know where you're coming from and all the various interests that you're in. So tell us a little bit about how you got here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I'm fortunate to be born during the technical revolution, at least the beginnings of it. Started in the mailroom at Arthur Andersen in San Francisco. Just worked my way up into IT there and really fell in love with all things related to technology and computers. But probably less about the more of the technology and more about the understanding the gist of it. And that's a clue for another conversation later. But the idea that I could take something that was a little bit complicated and explain it to the average person. So in those early days, it was a huge, huge attribute. And I took advantage of it as becoming a computer trainer, a teacher, instructor. And that led me along the way to companies, including my own training business, to companies like PeopleSoft and Apple and Microsoft. And that ability to break things down to simple terms for either my customers or my students, and found a real passion for that. So roles include sales, trainer. I've also done pre-sales engineering. I'm doing alliances and partnerships right now at F5 in Seattle.
Amazing. I know that you're avid musicians and you get to play a lot. Obviously, you know, if you guys can see your gorgeous background, some of my favorites are right on the wall there. Tell me a little bit about your music background, how from an engineer to music.
Yeah, it was a little bit back in high school, just kind of fell in love. My brother is also a drummer and I really enjoyed watching him and pick them up and played all through high school into my early 20s in nightclubs and venues here in the San Francisco Bay Area. Kind of walked away from it for a little while to have a family and grow some kids and do all that kind of stuff, the family stuff, but got back into it about 10, 15 years ago and played with a number of bands, some folks here in San Francisco area. Got to play with some folks from the Greg Kinn Band and I knew some guys from Santana and some other folks. And I'm a drummer and it's a huge passion for me. It's a lot of fun to express myself and get out a little bit too.
I'm so curious to jump how all those different, what seems on the surface, different interests sort of connect through your dyslexia. You know, on this podcast, we're really interested in how dyslexia can be a strength in your life, in your workplace, in your music and everything we do. Because, you know, as I tend to sort of say is that I'm not an expert in dyslexia. I'm just a dyslexic and we're all different, you know, and seeing the world through the lens of dyslexia, it's everything we do, right? It's how we work, how we play the drums, how we do all the things we do in our world. So tell me a little bit, I'm curious about your early career and how did dyslexia shape you and how did you work through some of those early challenges?
Yeah, I did not know I was dyslexic until my 40s, and I'll come back to that in a second, but I barely graduated high school. I mean, just by the skin of my teeth. And never really understood why. I thought I was pretty smart. I hung around some pretty smart people, I thought. And why am I stuck in remedial? Why am I so slow to this? The phrase that I got told a lot was, you just have to try harder. You're not trying hard enough. It was like, I'm trying harder than everybody, I think. But so my dad was an executive at Kaiser Aluminum in Oakland, California. And he was forced retired from his job. And so that was right when I was supposed to be going to college. And I just said, you know, Dad, forget about it. You know, you've got problems. I can't figure out why I don't like school. So let's just forego all that for now. Maybe some other day I'll ask you. And at that time, I had a real strong interest in graphic arts and design, just kind of as a hobby, and spent a little time in a graphic shop, a little print shop, and really enjoyed that. But during that time, we had computers. It was the first set of Macs in a print shop. It's called Laser Graphics. And the people would come in and they'd be just frustrated. They'd sit down on their computer and they couldn't do what they wanted to do. They wanted to do some flyers. They wanted to do stuff. And so I went to the owner and I said, well, can I just do some classes? You know, I'll give you, you know, you can charge them and I'll take a piece of it after hours. And it was really successful. And so that led me to a computer training company that I ended up actually becoming a partner in. And we ran some computer training in the Bay Area for years and years and years. But I think it was that school experience that helped me with the teaching experience, meaning if I could understand it, then I thought anybody can get this. And let me try to break this down. It took me to, after I got out of my own business, I went to PeopleSoft, which was just starting to take off, and did all of their classes for development for companies like PwC and Accenture, and as they're working on developing the ERP systems for their customers. And then lo and behold, I was teaching a class one day for a couple of students, and my future boss that I later followed to another company was in the class. And he said, you know, you have a way of explaining this stuff that makes us all understand it. You'd be really good in sales. And I was like, oh, sales. That means trying to convince somebody that's something they don't need, right? Or, you know, we always jump to that, you know, used car sales guy. And he goes, no, it's consultative. You help people, you help them understand, then they're going to want to buy it. And that, when it kind of dawned on me that, oh, that's a great way to pursue that. But also it was, you know, it was also well-paid job too. So it gave me a lot of success that way. Mm-hmm. And then that led to different roles similar literally to that, which was pre-sales engineering at Documentum, partners and alliances, which is a form of selling too, right? Convincing two companies to work together, and then into Pureform sales at Microsoft. But yeah, I think the underlying theme there is all about that, you know, helping people understand this is the way this works. This is how it's going to benefit you, which is really what true consultative selling was. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was my oldest daughter, who's now 27. She was in grade school, and she was, we made the ridiculous mistake of putting her into dual immersion. And the reason it's a mistake, for those who don't know, dyslexics have challenges with multiple languages or learning additional languages, not all, but some do. And the teacher said, you know, your daughter is catching this Spanish thing really well, but I'm worried about her English. And so we were fortunate to find someone who kind of pulled us aside in those days to say, well, I'm not supposed to say this word, but I think she's dyslexic. And we're like, what the heck is that? You know, oh my God, what's wrong with our daughter? You know, going off the deep end on that. But it then all just started to make sense. It was like, oh my gosh, this is me. I can't do that. And she's having trouble, and on and on and on. So that was the beginning of that.
And you were 40 when you first found out, huh?
Yeah, I was in my early 40s. And I didn't, you know, at first I was like, this is impossible. There's no way. She can't. She's perfect, right? We all think our kids are perfect, right? What do you mean? What is this? And then I started reading about it and learning about it. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know. And my parents, you know, they're in their 90s now, and that kind of Midwest generational, they came from Oklahoma. There's, you know, we don't talk about our problems. You know, we don't tell anybody our kids have problems, right? And so they would keep throwing me at tutors, right? Oh, let's just find him another tutor. Let's send him over here.
So since you did not know you were dyslexic until you were quite late or later in life, you never needed to sort of hide your dyslexia like so many of us do when we learned younger, and then we try to just sort of just don't look at me, right?
Right.
You know, don't catch me. But you sort of overcame that stuff because you thought that was us, that's your personality, the way you computed the world. And how's your daughter doing now? I mean, how is she thriving?
Good, good. She also very creative. You know, we're a lot alike. We both have some associated ADD and anxiety with it. But the good thing about it, and I have a second daughter who also has dyslexia. The good thing I think that came out of that is that we can all talk about it, and we can all kind of laugh about it and joke about it. And, you know, what time is it? I don't know. It's not a digital clock, or, you know, all the little dyslexia jokes. Right. And, and then we also do this probably terrible thing, but we can spot it, you know, in the family. Oh, because my wife has a couple of brothers who are also, we think, dyslexic too. It's dual genes. My kids didn't have a chance.
How did you kind of breach from there and obviously sales and then into the sort of the moment you decide to open up your dyslexia at the workplace and kind of start that trajectory of educating your colleagues, community, and so forth?
Yeah. So when the second daughter was in middle school and really struggling, we're fortunate in the Bay Area, there's a pretty well-known dyslexia-only school in Belmont called Charles Armstrong. We were able to take advantage of that. But once I got over there and got involved with the most wonderful headmistress in the world, Claudia Kuchek, who ran the school for many, many years, you know, Claudia, she got wind that I was at Microsoft, and she's like, oh, I want to talk to you, you know, and got me on a kind of volunteer board thing for tech. And I got him some Microsoft products. And she says, oh, yeah, you know, you need to go talk to this thing called Parents Education Network. They're around here and you need to get involved. And yeah, Parents Education Network was a group here in the city for many, many years. Dewey Rossetti ran and founded with Sandy Ottinelli, from the wife of Paul Ottinelli from Intel. So some really, really well-off parents realized they had kids who were challenged and struggling, and put together this organization. And so that's where I got really deep. That's where I said, okay, I'm going to join the board. I'm going to get them involved. And I was, not to toot Microsoft's horn, but they were very encouraging for their employees to get involved. In fact, they even sponsored training for us to learn how to be on a board and educated us. And so it was about the time right after. There was a time at Microsoft where they did this thing called stacked ranking. And so stacked ranking is kind of like musical chairs. You've got 10 people on your team, and every year you only have 9 chairs. And so somebody's got to go, right? And so they were doing that. You know, that's Bill, old school, and even Steve did that for years. But then, boom, Steve was gone, and that all went away. And Satya, the new CEO, is a much kinder, gentler, appreciative person, got rid of that. And I felt like it was time to say, okay, I can explore my difference. I will say it was hugely scared. I was mortified, because leading up to that point, if you expressed any kind of, you know, weakness, it was blood in the water, you know, like sharks, you know, they were going to come after you. But I felt like we had kind of turned the corner on that. And so fortunately or unfortunately, I had a brand new manager. He had never managed before. He was one of those guys that did really well in sales, but hey, we think he can be a manager. Let's throw him in and put him in the deep end. And he was a lot younger than me. And so I worked up the screws and walked in there, and I just said, hey, I'm dyslexic, and here's what that means, and here's why it's important to you, and why it's important to me, and here's what I bring to it. And the sheer look on his face was like, oh my God. He thought it was a disease, or he had no idea what it was. He was like, what am I going to have to do? And I said, look, man, it's okay. You're fine. You know, there's a program here. They're going to set me up with some tools and some accommodations. But, you know, here's why maybe when I explain something, you know, you don't get it until I get to the end. Or, you know, the kind of usual dyslexia stuff where we see, you know, Brock and Frenette call it kind of seeing in the future, but really it's the patterns that we see that are laid out. And we know, oh, at the end of this pattern, this is what's going to happen, right? We say that stuff in a meeting, in a room, and people go, what the hell just happened? We didn't go from A to Z. We just went right directly to Z, you know? And so I had to explain that, and I had to explain a few other things, but no, it was a great experience.
Yeah. So, I mean, perfect segue. So how did you sort of get from this to deciding to get involved in the conference, obviously putting so much effort, bringing the community? Tell us a little bit about how you bridge from there to there.
Yeah, so super fortunate. Microsoft's campus in Mountain View has a big, giant theater, and we're able to take advantage of it. And my job and what I was doing at Microsoft was selling people on the idea of using Microsoft Office. So SharePoint, Exchange, all the tools, the things that you think of, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, all that. And they kept driving home the point that stop talking to IT. all you guys do is go to IT and you sell to the CIO. Go talk to the business. That's where the money is. You know, go talk to finance and HR and, you know, whatever else. So I sit there and I go, well, you know, maybe that's what I need to do is get to know, you know, because I knew the CIO's name of his dog, right? We got to know those guys, you know, we go to dinner with them and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know anybody in HR at, let's say, NVIDIA or Facebook or, you know, all my customers in the Bay Area. So let's put on a conference. And let's put on a conference and invite my customers' business units, right? So I go to my CIO at, you know, wherever, and I say, or eBay, and I say, hey, you know, can you get the VP of HR to come to my conference? Are they interested in dyslexia or neurodiversity? It was so scary. I was so afraid. I didn't know if anybody was going to show up. It's like 325 seats. I had lined up all these speakers. I lined up the IDs. I lined up some panelists from Stanford. And it was a roaring success. It was full. And my GM, who turns out revealed to me that her daughter was dyslexic, which I never knew, came up to me and she said, you got to do another one of these. And I'm like, okay, yeah, great. Will you forgive my quota this year? You know, like this is a lot of work. And so then we did a total of three. We did another one on autism. And then we did one in Redmond on the whole topic of disability. We expanded it to, that was about 400 people in the worldwide purchasing team's annual meeting. And then when I broke away from Microsoft, we did two more. I've done two more at Stanford as part of the Charles Schwab Dyslexia Center.
Amazing. Do you still get nervous to get on stage as a dyslexic?
No, you know, that part, that doesn't scare me. It's just that nobody will show, right? It's like all these empty seats. And, you know, I've spent all this money and time and, you know, because I don't mind talking in front of people, but yeah, I was nervous that it was going to be a bust, but it's worked out really well. The Stanford ones, we've had capacity both times, although the last one was fortunately online, but yeah, they've done really well, really well.
Yeah. I can so relate to this story. I mean, it's so inspiring how you kind of took this on and jumped right in front of it. And I gave a talk at South by South about dyslexia and design thinking. And you know, I was super nervous to get on stage because I memorizing, it was, they wanted a really polished, there is multiple screens, you know, feed, sound, everything was going on. And first, like you, I was like, would anybody care? And well, I ordered from, you know, like one of those posters, postcards, places, some merch to sort of promote it. And as a dyslexic, instead of, 100 of each, I end up ordering 10,000 of each. So while I'm at the conference at the hotel, they says, oh, there is some boxes for you. And when I arrived to the front of the hotel at the concierge, there was literally a pallet worth of merch. I'm like, what is this? So I hired like guerrilla style people to just dispose, because I couldn't get them all put up. So I hired a bunch of people and they canvassed Austin to the point I had more promotion than the conference.
Oh my
A lot of people thought that this was sort of, you know, one of the big talks. It was just a small little, you know, side venue. I mean, you know, so I come to give the talk and there is a line around the block. I mean, hundreds of people, standing room only. And now I'm like so scared because it's the first time I'm really talking about dyslexia. I was hoping there'll be a couple of dozen folks, you know.
Right.
Obviously, getting on stage, forgetting it all, the nerves went away. And the amount of interest that we got from the audience really woke me up to the fact that, I think very similar to your story, woke me up to the fact that we really need to have this kind of format to give voice and community to the things that we are, you know, at this point, I'm so proud of my dyslexia. So I can very much relate to that fear. Would anybody care? And, you know, so many people out there need our, there's local community. How does this conference drove awareness and affected the change internally in Microsoft? I mean, have you seen more people coming up, more people talking about it, more accepted in the day-to-day workplace?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the thing that you probably experience every once in a while being open about it is people wanting to share their story, right? I think you and I talked about this when we first met. It's the, you know, the guy that hangs around or the woman that, you know, and they want to just like share. But your question is, did it change things? And it was right at the early days of the autism hiring program. So I think there were other facets of people that really wanted to affect the change. In fact, one of the things I heard about the autism hiring program, which was pretty stunning, was once they got the first cohort off the ground, the first hiring group off the ground, they said people reached out of the woodwork and said, I want to be involved. I want to disclose. which was something they never, ever could or would. And that, you know, we talk about it all the time now, is, you know, bringing your natural self to the office, to the work, the thing that you do, bringing yourself and being yourself is so powerful, right? So I think that's been the huge, you know, shift or dynamic thing that's happened in a lot of these companies, especially now today with trying to find people. Everybody's looking for more people, right?
How can employers empower dyslexic employees more, or non-dyslexic employees, but how can we empower our teams to bring themselves to the workplace in an authentic way? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we were just talking about this today because we're working on a possible neurodiversity hiring program. And I think the biggest thing that blocks people or blocks the, let's just call it the management, is the unsureness of being correct, right? I mean, maybe go back a few years and, you know, whether it's race or, you know, the sexual, you know, revolution. I mean, it's that I don't want to step on anybody's toes. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to treat you the wrong way. And so, you know, the folks that are in that middle, let's call it middle layer of management, is struggling with that. I want to differentiate. I want to recognize. I want to understand the differences, but I don't want to step on, you know, something that's going to get me in trouble. And so that basic foundation layer only gets put in place when everybody feels like they're trusted and have a trusting environment, right? My boss has to be able to say, okay, I've got this guy over here who gets up at 11 o'clock in the day and works until midnight. That's okay. You know, we're all up at 9 doing meetings. He's not there, you know, because that's the way he works, or whatever the specific thing is. And I think it's huge. I mean, you know, when I started working at Arthur Andersen, you know, you didn't look anybody in the eye, right? You had two color shirts you could wear, blue and white, right? And it was like, it was, you know, yes, Mr. Green, you know, you didn't look. And it's light years from that, right? If I had walked up to the managing partner and said, hey, I'm Stu Shader, I'm dyslexic, he would just like, get this guy out of here, you know? Whereas now the companies are realizing how valuable that difference is, right? How they're, and, you know, it's not just a slogan or a banner, you know, or a thing on their website. It's like, we've got to do this. It reminds me of you, because I'm sure in your business, it's much more accepting and appreciative for the creative side, right? It's like, we'll take all comers, you know, come on, show me what you got. But in, you know, really hardcore, you know, finance or science or engineering, we got to get this job done and you got to act, you know, a certain way. And that, you know, glacial melting of that is, it's happening. I mean, it really is, because they're realizing that's the most valuable asset, right? I mean, if I asked you, what's the most valuable asset to Gershonian Company? It's what? It's your people, right?
Hands down.
Yeah.
Yeah. As you're saying this, it's really going through my dyslexia mind is sort of, you know, seeing, you know, the alphabet and then the numbers and then colors. And, you know, my own process to get to that sort of self-trust was to build a relationship with my dyslexia. Mm. And it took a long time, but, you know, time is just a construct. But it took some time to get to a place where I was able to really speak about it with confidence. And I remember when I was a little boy, my mom sent me to the time, you know, but back to pre-phones and all that to go process some film, you know. And mm-hmm. So she said, I'm going to go to the grocery store. You go to the film store. Here's a check. Just pay for the roll of film from the trip. And she gave me a check. And I was like, oh, I'm going to have to fill it out. So she's like, no, just ask the lovely person at the store. They'll help you out. So I was like, okay, you know, and I got to the counter and I'm looking at the business card. So I put the business card next to the check and I copied the name of the organization. So I was like, okay, halfway done here, right? But the big challenge is about to come, in which is I had to put the numbers in and the right commas and zeros, and I had to write it out. So I did the numbers because I saw it on the register. And then I asked a woman to help me write the number. And she took this sort of educational mindset with me and said, you are teenagers. You should write it. So I was like sweating and I wrote it incorrectly. I think I missed a vowel in the word four or something like that. And she really reprimanded me. And it was devastating for me, right? As it's so many of us. But I got to a place over the years that I actually realized this was on her. Right. But actually, maybe I can't draw the numbers on the check, but I can take a photograph or I can create something in the world that tells a world of insight and stories. And when that sort of paradigm starts to shift, that I can engineer, I can do other things that are not related to this linear methodology or linear sort of non-negotiable way of communicating, that it didn't matter anymore. And I kind of used to get to those situations much quicker and say, hey, I'm dyslexic, fill it out, you know? And it was more of a confidence and a commend toward sort of bringing the people around me to support that. But it takes some guts to get there, I think, a little bit.
And so when I have to explain sometimes to executives about it, I say, well, you know, there's not one kind of fish, you know, there's not one kind of tree. And then they go, oh, I get it. There's a different kind of brain wiring. And I go, yeah, there's dysgraphia, there's autism, there's, you know, all these other things that we were built this way. You know, I'm tall, you're short, you've got black hair, I got blonde hair, whatever. And to understand that there's nothing out there it's changed, right? I mean, Richard Branson and Charles Schwab and Steven Spielberg to some degree, but even still, it's like, oh yeah, those guys seem pretty impressive. I don't know why that would help them. You know, like a tall basketball player, or, you know, or a short jockey, right? It's like, I can't see it. I don't know what it is that makes, you know, why. And then somebody told me the famous Richard Branson story, which was, you know, he didn't understand net versus gross. Right. And somebody actually drew him a picture of a fish net and said, well, this is net. These fish over here are gross, you know. He's like, oh, I get it, you know, right?
And so I love that story. Yeah,
I do too. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, you know, he takes avid notes, you know. He's a really obsessive about that. And some of us develop these sort of side skills, right? Like, I don't think I was born with a photographic memory, but I aggressively and obsessively practiced it. So I know if I have to spell a word, where did I see it last? So I can go and find it. So it was more of a necessity. And then I became, as you know, in my first early years in school, my parents would say, Gil knows where everything is. So he would say, where are the keys? And I says, Dad, it's underneath your bed. And he's like, how did you know that? Because I brushed against it at some point. And when he asked me, I just knew where to retrieve it. And now I also take avid notes, but I practice over the years is really a full body listening.
Yeah.
Because I you know, writing, sometimes I write something, I look back to it and it looks beautiful. I mean, I might as well frame it and sign it because it's like, what a great art piece, but you cannot understand. It's no language for nobody, you know?
What was I writing? What did I say?
It's like, we find these kind of things, and I know that different organizations have different types of groups and resources that really support them to learn, get some agency, as well as some other tools. Tell me a little bit about some of the employment resource group that you've been involved in. Yeah. That's been helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm in a company called F5 Networks. They're based in Seattle. They're 25 years old and been very successful in doing what they do, which is a device that makes the internet go faster. Mm-hmm. And so in a simple form. And so they are about 5,000 employees, maybe six now. And employee resource groups or employee inclusion groups, they are volunteer organizations. And most are familiar with either, you know, Black or women or multicultural or other groups. And they had somebody try and start a disability group, but it didn't go. And so when my company, the one I'm at prior to F5, Nginx got bought by F5, I said, well, you know, I want to get it started again and get it going again. And really the main driving goal is change, right? Is to try to drive change. And what I didn't realize 3 years ago when I started it was that the executives look back to you and say, okay, well, how do we respond to this? You know, or how do we go forward with that? A great example of that would be mental health, right? With the pandemic and everything, mental health fell under our umbrella. You know, we're having people going out. We have people leaving. We have people going out sick. What, you know, can't find people, blah, 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 blah. And it was like our group saying, okay, we're going to do these, you know, there's actually a formal program called Mental Health First Aid and then Mental Health Roundtables and these other programs to get employees talking. Same thing true with neurodifferences, right? So, you know, it was an educational focus, but it had lots of different things like bringing speakers in or doing interview shows, doing webcasts or podcasts like this. But one of the cool stories that came out of it was I said, you know, somewhere on our list of things to do, we got to address the websites, you know, the portals, how someone who's blind or how someone who's, you know, challenged is going to read this. And it was awesome because my executive sponsor, Mika Yamamoto, is the chief marketing officer. And I just said, yeah, I'm interested in doing this. And I think we should do this. We've got to fix these things. And she's like, well, great. I'm just about to redo all the web properties and all of F5. Here's Joel over here, who's responsible. Tell Joel what he needs to do. It's like, great, you know. And we become kind of those, you know, almost like startups of ideas or incubation of ideas, get things going. And then I tell my HR contacts, I say, okay, now I'm ready to, you know, throw this over the wall. And this becomes a formalized thing, right? We're offering mental health first aid to anybody at F5 who wants to take it. You know, it's a half day class, sign up. It's kind of like, you know, Red Cross first aid and so on and so forth. So the one that I'm leading right now, the project I'm leading right now is a neurodiversity hiring, which is similar to the autism hiring programs at Microsoft and SAP. And my theory is that by calling it maybe a little broader with neurodiversity is that we can also bring in some of the other folks that aren't just necessarily autistic, but may have challenges with getting in the door. The challenges are different, right? The autistic challenges are looking somebody in the eye when they're interviewing, maybe not flapping or looking away or what some people might call acting, you know, different or weird. Dyslexics have challenges getting in the door sometimes because for me, you know, no college degree, right? If I applied at F5, they would say, great, got all this experience. Where'd you go to school? Let me tell you that story. You know, luckily, knock on wood, I only had to have that conversation once, but the tech industry is, yeah, we're like in the industrial age, right? It's like this, we'll hire anybody who can, you know, figure it out. I'm sure there are jobs that I would never be able to get to without a degree, but most of the time, 99% of the time, it's, yeah, it looks like you know what you're doing and, you know, come on in and let's talk. And, you know, we at dyslexics have a, I think, an advantage of communication and talking, illustrating for people, whereas maybe the autistic world doesn't. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's been great. It's been great.
What do you think is the future of dyslexia in the workplace? You know, if you look to, you know, a few years out, 10 years out, where do you think that this is going to?
I guess I would say that it's going to be more viewed as a strength, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you could equate it to, I'm going to go to this startup because, you know, this superstar who was at this startup, I've watched that person grow or go through all this. I think it's the dyslexic will be that attribute. One of the attributes that says, okay, I can be accepted there, whether I'm dyslexic or not. I think that's really where, you know, the openness and the disclosure is going to lead us to is more awareness. Now, that's not saying I would want to go work for Gil just because he's dyslexic, but that tells me that he's proud of it. Then I can be proud of my difference, you know, whatever it is, right? That I know that he's going to be accepting, you know, that it's going to be, you know, an advantage to him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, look at like, you know, like sports teams, look at the Warriors, right? They don't really have a giant guy, but they have a bunch of different guys that all do the things that need to be done to win a lot of games, right? It's not the typical mold. So, yeah. That's the future, is that difference is going to be the key, I think.
Yeah, what a shift. I mean, from your experience, beautiful story, to the rest of the world, I mean, you know, it's obviously globalization. We are working, you know, for us, clients all over the world, to bring in folks from, you know, different cultures, to show that, to experience that, to celebrate that, really enriches the experience. What would you say your dyslexia superpower is?
Mine is relationships and connections. Mm-hmm. So I see where something's going to lead me to, you know, and pull those things together, the people that might be doing something well over here and pulling something from over here and joining those. And that, especially in my work, it's, you know, let's all work together on something, you know, that's going to help us all move forward. That's been super, super helpful for me to see that, the relationships.
I really appreciate you sharing and spending time with me today and our audiences. In closing, if you had to describe your dyslexia in one word or a sentence, what would that word be?
I would say it is my superpower, or it is my thing. It is what makes me unique. Mm-hmm. And once I started to embrace it, then things really took off for sure. Once I started to understand it and not be shameful of it and be, you know, worried about it or concerned about it. But yeah, it's made me braver. It's made me, you know, try things, do things, don't hold back for sure.
Yeah, embracing it, right? Getting to have a relationship with it so you can celebrate your whole self. I love that. Well, Stu, thank you so much for being our guest today. I really, really appreciate this. It's always such a pleasure to talking with you and being inspired by all the things you're doing for all of us in the community.
Thanks, Gil. Same here. I really enjoy spending time with you. It's been an honor. Thank you.
And you have been listening to Dyslexic Design Thinking.
If you enjoyed our conversation today, be sure to subscribe to this series wherever you get your podcasts. And follow along on Instagram at Dyslexic Design Thinking. You can also drop us a line at dyslexia@gershoni.com to receive our monthly newsletter and learn about our upcoming programming. Dyslexic Design Thinking is produced by Gershoni Creative. Until next time, be well.